Willkommen in Berlin Hauptbahnhof.
This is Berlin Stories.
We're backstage at the Volksbühne in Berlin, the People's Theater. I'm holding my trumpet, waiting for my cue to go on. Lady Macbeth is about to scream. Then Banquo will scream as well. That's when I have to run on stage while playing a high note on the trumpet. The actors on stage are singing Pergolesi's Tabat Mata, a hymn to the Virgin Mary. It loops when Lady Macbeth shrieks, Nachmal. Again. The Volksbühne is a theater known for bashing boundaries. David Martin's rendition of the Scottish play has eliminated the character of Macbeth. Banquo is a woman, and music replaces most of Shakespeare's text. During every performance, while Lady Macbeth and Banquo scream, I put the horn to my lips, take a deep breath, and marvel at the borders crossed in this scene. Noise and music, matriarch and patriarch, the earthy and the holy, with Lady Macbeth raging at the Virgin Mary. To me, this moment is very Berlin. Our trinity of screams collide with the shaman blues by the doors. Oh, here's my cue to go on. Gotta play. This is Paul Brody for NPR, taking you on a journey through the fringe sound of Berlin, exploring the noise and musical expression of the city. We'll hear from a dozen Berliners engaged in sound, space, and bashing boundaries. For over 20 years, I've worked as a composer and trumpeter in Berlin. At the start of this project, I thought I could produce this story as easily as tossing off a familiar melody on my horn. But with each inquiry into the fringe sound, the melody that I thought I knew so well twisted and shifted keys. Why the fringe sound? More than almost any other city in the world, Berlin represents upheaval, change, marginal living, borders, and border bashing. The wall was already down when I came in 92, but the idea of defined boundaries had rooted in the Berlin mentality even before the wall. Punk and Dada, squatters and spies, free jazz and secret police are words often used while talking about Berlin. How does this dynamic manifest itself in sound? Let me take you to the second place that inspired this radio feature. While waiting at the train platform near my house, a high-pitched hammering irritated me. I turned around to see what it was. The quality of the sound changed. Back home in California and even in historic Boston where I studied, I had never heard this. I took up my phone to record it, and within seconds, my retired trumpet teacher in California received an MP3 with the message, Jay, hello from Berlin. Can you identify the sound? The music of cobblestones is rarely heard in America. Despite Berlin's history of upheaval and change, despite the new high-rises and ubiquitous street widening projects, the tradition of creating walkways with cobblestones endures. Workers with hammers crouch, tapping stones one by one. Both the ping of the hammers and the patterns of stone are fingerprints of the city. What does this tell us about Berlin and identity? When I arrived at the theater, I asked Marie Goyette, one of my colleagues in Macbeth. In the early 90s, she moved from Montreal to Berlin to work as a classical pianist. Life in Berlin inspired her to look beyond the 88 keys.
When I came to Berlin, my experience was like a senses opening, basically. I became much freer with my way of looking at things and thinking about it. That was a very specific Berlin.
As Marie Goyette heard the hammers tapping stones on the Admiral Bridge, she heard music too, and composed a duet for piano and cobblestone workers. She debuted her piece on the bridge itself with Flastersteinleger, cobblestone workers surrounding her piano. Her piece lasted as long as it took to fill 1 square meter of a street with stone. Unfortunately, the recording of her composition is lost, so I took the liberty to compose a new piece with cobblestone workers, piano, and Goyette's voice describing the event.
The musicality of it was really nice. They put one stone, they start hitting, and they can look away because they hear when it's in the ground, and in the meantime, they took another stone. It's a very light sound, and it has its own rhythm, like every one of them has its own rhythm. And it's normally five, ta 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 ta, five, ta 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 ta, and until it goes into the sand. So I thought, my God, they're playing music in a way.
After the performance, some audience members offered a different interpretation of the scene.
It was a very nice little event. And then I was called a feminist afterwards because the man, I was sitting on the piano and there was a lot of men kneeling and doing that, which was so absurd.
Es sind 6. Es wäre ein Rabatt.
Nee. Die Stücke 3 Euro, guck mal. 20 Euro fast das hier.
Also stimmt, ich habe nicht gut gerechnet. Stimmt wirklich, Entschuldigung, ja. So frech wollte ich mal, wirklich nicht fragen.
Ich sage meine Frau und zurückkommen.
Okay.
Entschuldige. Ja, ich bin echt schlecht in Mathematik.
So. West Berlin was really second-hand city. All things were on the flea market, second-hand. Our parents bring us underwear. Things like wigs from old ladies you find. Yeah. It's not such a trashy flea market in West Berlin in the 80s. Yeah, and they did, the harmony is a disharmony.
The harmony is a disharmony. Wolfgang Müller, artist and author of the book Subculture in West Berlin, 1979-89. Müller sees Goyette's cobblestone composition in the Berlin tradition of recycling objects into art. He tells about the Dada dancer and singer and actress Valeska Gert, who in the 1950s opened the Witch's Kitchen, a cafe in Berlin with a flea market decor, a microcosm of Berlin culture.
Berlin, dein Tänzer ist der Tod.
Im Schall und Rauch mimt die dadaistische Tänzerin Valeska Gert die Frau im Taumel des Lasters.
In Berlin, back in Berlin in the 50s, she called it Hexenküche, Witchcraft Kitchen. And her concept was just to take all the second-hand furnitures from everywhere, second-hand glasses, put them together. That there is no style. You take a look and you think nothing fits together, but the life is moving on this chaotic thing, and the life could be very harmonic. The sound could fit together on the space of a chaotic environment.
The West Berlin band Ein Sturzen in Neubauten is well known for exploring the acoustic qualities of the objects found in junk heaps and abandoned factories and recycling them into musical instruments. Neubauten guitarist Achen Arbeit explains that the band has an entire practice room full of found objects brought to acoustic life.
Unique thing about Neubauten is that they play with metal. They build instruments from metal or use what they found in the beginning because they couldn't afford instruments. So, which is typical Berlin, because everybody didn't have money here. Né? So they found things on the street, or they went to the junkyard and found objects that sounded good. So they were starting from this. So all this develops around, and still is, develops around inventing or finding sounds from objects. Big metal sheets, like a snare drum is always a metal sheet, for instance. Né? There's a famous one, it's a metal spring, which is on a stand, and it's this is the Neubauten instrument. And when you bang on it, it has a really unique sound. And this is really the one instrument which carries since 30 years many songs. It's this bass spring.
Before we go on, I'd like to add an ear note to the story. A few years ago, I had a gig playing trumpet with the Neubauten band. At the first rehearsal, I was happy to find myself sitting next to the drummer with all his objects, including the famous bass spring. I wanted to say hello and, in my joking way, said, "You call yourself a drummer? You don't even have a snare drum or a hi-hat." He looked at me as if he was going to hit me with a stick, but the trombonist chimed in, "That's just Paul's way of being friendly." While West Berliners celebrated a secondhand world, East Berliners sought refuge in a different subculture. Singer Uschi Brüning and saxophonist Ernst Ludwig Petrovsky are pioneers of East German free jazz.
That was a phenomenon that can't be compared with anywhere else. It was a one-time thing in history in East Berlin.
Ost-Berlin.
Weil die Musik war ja nonverbal.
The music was nonverbal. Nobody sang, they only played. And anyone could put their own thoughts in the music. And it was generally against the government, against the order. That's why free jazz attracted a mass of people who weren't free jazz fans. There was a message, a wordless message, that one could identify with against the confinement of a small country.
Yeah.
That was the secret of the astonishingly large audiences, sometimes like at Woodstock.
If you ask musicians to describe their music, they generally mention instruments, genre, harmony, and rhythm. When I asked Brüning and Petrovsky if there was something particular in the sound of East German free jazz, they thought a moment, then described their mentality while playing.
At first, it's always who can play the loudest and who can overpower the others. Always against. Hold your place. You can't do that for a long time. But there were ground rules like that.
That was perhaps the GDR part.
Vielleicht war das der DDR-Anteil.
The quality of a sound changes according to the space in which it's made. Listen to me play my trumpet in the studio, then in a church. But what about the place in history where music is made? In Berlin, the history of a performance space is often considered along with its acoustics. I call it historical reverb.
Everywhere you looked and everything you touched had a historical reverb for sure. But to turn it into a punk thing, that's the nice thing about it. That was the temptation, of course. Like, you know, like to go illegally in a building and record and everything. So it became this youth play park.
Wow, okay. Yeah, crossing borders is exciting. And crossing forbidden borders is
even more exciting, of course. And that made basically those years you're talking about, you know, 80s and 90s.
Thank you.
15 Sekunden.
Der Krieg der Basis ist ständig im Kopf. Die Feinden werden gekittet.
It was, also old, not used water tower. And we climb inside this thing, you know, 20 meters in the air, you know. And then we make sounds and listen to the sound and tape the sound.
This area in Berlin where several train lines cross is called Gleisdreieck, literally translated track triangle. Because of property laws during the time of the wall, neither East nor West Berliners could use the space. In glorious, youthful defiance, Wolfgang Müller and his legendary West Berlin band, Die Tödliche Doris, snuck into the giant water tower to record. The massive reverb in the water tower was compounded by layers of historical reverb.
This area, Gleisdreieck, was inside West Berlin, so it belongs to the Western world, but the space belongs to East Germany because about special strange laws who were made after the war, all the traffic system from S-Bahn and train belongs to the East. But the East couldn't use this spaces really. So you have a lot of strange spaces like this water tower in this area, this rusted old thing. We were official in the East, in the communistic East,
yeah.
And making sound. Both things in the same moment. History of spaces is so important.
The drummer of Die Tödliche Doris, Dagmar Dimitrov, was in jail for several months in East Berlin before she was allowed to immigrate west.
So for her it was maybe also a special thing to sit in this tower belonging to the East, but no Eastern person can take her out of this place.
I bet she pounded those drums.
Yeah?
The members of Die Tödliche Doris band had the luxury to express their defiance of borders through music. It's important to remember that countless others in Berlin and elsewhere have not been so lucky. Please stay with us on Berlin Stories to hear the next section of the Fringe Sound of Berlin. Among other things, we will talk with architects Regina Leibinger and Frank Barco about public space, go for a listening walk with theater director David Martin, and discuss the Prussian tradition of tolerance with Robert Beachy, author of the book Gay Berlin, Birthplace of a Modern Identity.
The fascination about Berlin was that after the wall came down, that it opened up this huge space, this areas, which could be just reused. You know, nobody, the capitalistic economy couldn't be so fast to occupy it so quick.
Originally from Poland, Sebastian Meissner works in Berlin as an electronics and radio documentary artist. He often collaborates with musicians in other cities, including Detroit, Berlin's sister city. Ambient and techno musicians have been swapping beats and sounds for the last 20 years. Despite their radical different histories, 80s Berlin and Detroit today share a similar urban landscape.
So they were both working on a similar aesthetic. The life circumstances, I think, back then were similar, and also the places for participation of this culture were similar, like warehouses, abandoned buildings.
While Sebastian Meissner is downloading audio files from Detroit, two blocks away in Berlin, Daniel Dorsch is clicking on a Dropbox folder labeled Bangladesh. At the beginning of 2014, choreographer Helena Waldman went to Bangladesh to collect both sounds and dancers. The dancers will move to the sounds of machines sewing clothes for American and European companies. Dorsch describes the compositional idea.
Tabla is a percussion instrument from the north of India. It goes like din din da ka din da ka dun da dun da ka dun da ka tiki tiki da da ka tiki tiki da da tiki 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 da ka. And the steps from the dancers, they do all also like this da da ka da da ka tiki tiki da 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 ka da da ka da da. So, and I make a composition with needles, and the needles goes.
Dorsch is paying respect to Indian music. Waldman is working with Bangladeshi dancers to comment on the labor conditions in apparel factories in Southeast Asia. The dancers in Waldman's piece represent the cheap labor of the culture industry. Suzanne Vincenz was artistic director of two projects exploring Berlin's historical reverb. The first was using the defunct National Bank of East Germany as a performance space. The concerts and exhibits in the bank reflected the building's many functions throughout its history. We're hearing Stefan Weyrauch's composition for Charlemagne and Factory Sirens performed at the Staatsbank. The Charlemagne looks like it could have been taken out of a Dr. Seuss illustration. It's a narrow, stubby body trumpet with several openings in the front. The nasal-sounding horn was the last East German president's favorite instrument. Are the sounds of the Charlemagne and factory sirens echoing the history of the Berlin Bank? Or bashing at it? Suzanne Vincenz's ears led her from bank halls to train depots and on a journey from Berlin through Poland and Russia. Her Roundhouse Reverb project was not inspired by a building, but by two musicians, violinist Nurit Stark and soprano Carolyn Meltzer, performing fragments of Kafka's letters and diaries set to music by Georgi Kurtak.
There's a very nice word from Kurtak who said, the Kafka fragments should not be performed on a stage or in a concert hall. They should be like a Flugblätter thrown out.
Pamphlets, leaflets with notes blowing in the wind to be performed under bridges, in schoolyards, fields. A roundhouse is a massive building designed for servicing locomotives. They're the dinosaurs of the industrial age, warehouses where engines were repaired before trekking across continents.
So the roundhouse was the building in Berlin, which still exists, one of the last roundhouses in Germany.
Vincenz transformed the Kafka fragments by placing them in this unusual setting.
To bring it in a place which is round and which is very big also, which goes against the fragmentary character of the piece.
Floating on violin strings and vocal cords, the fragments of phrases of Kafka's thoughts flew from Berlin to resound in roundhouses in Poland and in Russia. Vincenz was interested in delving into both Kafka's life and Germany's past. While history is retrospective, enjoying music plants us in the present. The Staatsbank is now unrecognizable as a luxury hotel, and the roundhouses that still exist face the wrecking ball.
And Roundhouse Reverb, because it was really about these buildings, they're really falling apart, they're falling down. And it was also like catching the last moment when you could still hear the acoustics in these buildings.
I never expected that a story about the fringe sound of Berlin would lead me to learning about public space and to talking with Christina Edmeier, the president of the Chamber of Architecture in Berlin.
I think most people come to Berlin not because of the new architecture. And they even don't come to Berlin because of the really old architecture. But the most interesting architectures in Berlin are the ones which are not perfect, urban spaces which are in a state of transition.
The next visit is to the Barco Leibinger architecture firm. Regina Leibinger and Frank Barco have had a key role in shaping the Berlin counterpoint of rocks, glass, and steel.
Berlin is a city that has this tradition of being destroyed and being rebuilt and rebuilding itself. And
there's empty walls, you know, the Brandwände, the famous Berlin partition walls.
and there's brand new buildings next to it. There's so many different histories in so many different layers.
What makes Berlin really interesting for us are these kind of dissonance in a musical sense.
One dissonant sound is Potsdamer Platz. Is it a sour note in the disharmony of Berlin?
Even as horrible as Potsdamer Platz is, it's still totally dissonant because, you know, this is where the city is supposed to be finished. And it's not at all, because it just looks like an artificial thing that has been planted in. So there's these incomplete places around it.
I think there's a great term, what is it, like buildings rising into ruin or something. So there's this idea of something, of both renewal and decay, somehow coexisting side by side.
In the very early works, where we did, when we did a monument for the Bernauer Straße, we were very much architecturally working with that, where we would take the gravel, I mean, old gravel of from houses that were torn down, and then built sort of artificial mountains out of it. There we took really a direct reference in a way to working with the building material, so like taking old stuff and then transforming it into new architecture.
Berlin is a city condemned forever to becoming and never to be. Forever to becoming and never to be. Carl Scheffler, 1910. Let's go back to the Volksbühne and take a walk with theater director David Martin. Remember, he staged the Macbeth that you heard at the beginning of the show. Over the years of working together, I've noticed that he's influenced by the atmosphere of the city. What Berlin sounds inspire him?
The sound of Innenhöfe.
Courtyards.
It's very typical architecture in Berlin. In a lot of other cities, you have courtyards maybe, but not this closed in from every side.
Closed in from all sides, the courtyard is an institution in Berlin. We're walking down a loud, busy street. My curiosity often leads me to peek into an urban oasis. In 1922, writer Joseph Roth described them as miniature worlds.
And it's a very strange mixture, kind of faraway city noise, but it's always very intimate, and you hear little things coming out of apartments, and it's a mixture which is very typical for me, for Berlin, as a basic feeling. It's in moving, but at the same time, it's always tranquillo. So if Berlin would be a copy, where they copy the very hectic city and the village onto each other.
It's raining, but we continue to walk. David points to an arch in a building just off of Torstrasse in Berlin-Mitte. It's empty and its ragged stones have not yet been touched by gentrification. He tells about some street musicians he heard there, more involved in making music than money.
I saw some musician playing open architecture in the street where you realize they play there because the acoustic is good and not because of economic considerations. And this lonely, but musically perfect sound of musicians who are also not very communicative, just play for themselves, mixed with this silent but still very metropolitan sound of the city, is special.
Let's say goodbye to David Martin at the S-Bahn.
It starts from the station, and this is maybe the sound of the engine or something, but it's a jump of an octave. It's not the sound, ta-ra-ra, the doors are closed. It starts and then the engine begins deep. And there is this octave jump. And every station, and if you live 18 years in Berlin, then every station, 18 years, I connect this strange octave with Berlin.
We're taking the S-Bahn across town to Kreuzberg to have another talk with Wolfgang Müller and check out his first solo recording since his punk days. It's not a band, but an important sound of the Berlin night. It can be heard in courtyards and in the 16th century citadel Berlin, Spandau. Here's a track from the A-side of Wolfgang Müller's LP of Berlin Bats.
I made my first record after Die Tödliche Doris with the unhearable sounds, ultrasonic sounds of Berlin bats. And you know, in Citadelle Spandau, in this building, you have more than 10,000 bats during the winter. An album with the sounds of eight different species who are living in Berlin. A bat see by hearing. They orientate only by sounds through the space. It's a wonderful concept for Berlin. Huh?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of space, I spaced out a rehearsal. Gotta get across town to Neukölln, to Sasha's apartment. Come along. It'll be fun.
Yes.
Well.
I'm late for a rehearsal with the band Samer Reloaded. We play music from a 1930s Berlin record label dedicated to Jewish music, the Samer label. The project started when singer Fabian Schneidler gave the historic Samer recordings to Dr. Alan Byrne, pianist and director of Yiddish Summer Weimar. Dr. Byrne transcribed, selected songs, and founded the band. Joining Schneidler on vocals are Sasha Lurie, Daniel Kahn, and cosmetic singer Lawrence Glamber.
So it was you.
Yeah. How you doing? Sorry I'm late.
No problem.
Same place?
Same place.
Three. Wait. Okay.
Three.
The Samer record label was shut down in 1938. 1 year later, my mother's family was forced to leave Vienna and scattered to London, Buenos Aires, and New York. They were secular Jews, he a lawyer, she one of the first woman dentists in Austria. Like them, the Samer label was modern, cosmopolitan. The Berlin label dedicated to Jewish music has such a wide range of styles, from cabaret songs to opera to Yiddish folk songs, and in four different languages. While gorging on the melodies with my trumpet, I can't help but wonder...
multiplicity of cultures could flourish in the years before the National Socialists came to power.
Fringe culture isn't new to Berlin. In fact, the idea of fringe culture first came up in the 1890s.
I'm talking with historians Carol Scherer and Robert Beachy.
Berlin has long fostered cultural innovations and aesthetic interventions.
They explain that my neighborhood, Schöneberg, was, for example, already a center of gay culture a century ago.
We're not afraid to be queer and different. If that means hell, well, hell will take the chance. They are so
Professor Beach's book, Gay Berlin, Birthplace of a Modern Identity, explores the paradox of how a vibrant subculture took root in the center of the Prussian state.
What is so astonishing to me is this really central role that Berlin played in realizing something that we could describe as a gay identity. And it seemed to take shape here a long time before it did anywhere else. And it has a lot to do with the subculture in Berlin.
Berlin in 1900 was the center of the Prussian state, but it was also known for its clubs and cafes and other niches where social and cultural change could happen.
But there's also a weird way in which officials in Berlin actually tolerated this subculture to a certain extent and allowed it to flourish. And I think that's something that would be really surprising to most people. Nobody expects to talk about Prussian tolerance, right? I mean, it's always militarism. It's the Second World Wars. It's the Holocaust. I mean, it's all of these horrible, horrible features of German history. But there is another side. And I think Berlin, in some respects, really represents that.
well before the First World War, there were things in Berlin that you could see and experience that you couldn't as easily see and experience in other European cities.
And by the 20s, of course, it was a really exciting time.
Not afraid to be queer and different. If that means hell, well, hell will take the chance. They're all so straight up, tight, upright, and rigid. They march in lockstep, we prefer to dance. We see a world of romance.
Please stay with us on Berlin Stories for the concluding part of the Fringe Sound of Berlin. We'll speak with vocal acrobat David Moss about the Berlin identity, composer Ari Benjamin Myers about boundary bashing, and with author and American Academy scholar Leslie Dunton Downer about the NSA and the perversion of listening. After living in Berlin for about 7 years, I had a dream about America. I woke up feeling homesick, then realized that I had been dreaming in cartoon. The images swam through my head in synthetic colors, Tang orange, M&M red. My cartoon America wouldn't go away, so I took my 2-year-old son's collection of Carl Sandburg folklore and began arranging songs. The best singer for these, I thought, would be David Moss, an American sprechstimme acrobat. I was sure he lived in New York. As it turned out, he lived a few blocks away from me in Berlin.
Get out your gun and call to your dog. Get out your gun and call to your dog. Get out your gun and call to your dog. Go away to the woods, catch a brown hog, brown hog, brown hog.
There's a whole historical dimension to the city of Berlin, the desire to distort or pervert the mainstream as being a quality that existed in the cultural life of Berlin for a long time. If you have a personal idea, it can be appreciated, even if no one knows the outcome.
David Moss gives an example from one of his shows at the Hebel Theater, Rhythm in the 21st Century, with Stefan Kurt and Hans-Peter Kuhn.
We had a little bucket of red lentils hanging above the stage and above the on the ceiling, and under it was a snare drum on a stand. And at a certain exact moment, the bucket was opened, and this stream of red lentils poured down onto the snare drum in a beautiful light. And I was, I guess, playing the snare drum with two sticks, and the red lentils are flying everywhere in arcs and making sound as they hit the snare drum. And here you have a really good illustration of perversion and distortion together. Here you have the drum set being perverted, right? And the sound of the drum set being distorted.
14 years after David Moss came to Berlin, Leslie Dunton Downer came to the city on a fellowship with the American Academy. She confirms that Berlin still inspires artists to cross boundaries.
Well, one thing I've noticed here is just some of the amazing collisions of artists and talents coming together. So you'll have Turkish artists with members of the orchestra from Dresden, or putting voices together on stage with music. Where, you know, in most cities, you know, you would have your musicians and artists, you know, sort of traveling in their own lane. I think here, you know, you go into a concert hall, you go in to hear a gig somewhere, and you'll, you know, people more freely maybe pull into each other's lanes and also just create a brand new one. So I think that would be the hint for me that I'm probably in Berlin.
No city that I'm aware of has had the history of Berlin, the changes, the major revolutionary changes to its structure that a city like Berlin has had. And what kind of, in a certain way, freedom or explosive power to redefine what it is, to make it new. When I came here, I turned on the television in 91, and there was a panel discussion from 5 artists and organizers and politicians from Berlin. The question was, what should we do with our city? What should Berlin be like? Well, how do we want to change Berlin? Can you imagine? The question being, how can we change New York? What do we want New York to be like? It's, New York is done. It is what it is. But here, in a strange way, we all had some power to remake and continue to remake Berlin.
If musical borders were frontiers, then composer Ari Benjamin Myers has traversed worlds. In the mid-90s, he formed the Kurt Weill Ensemble. 10 years later, his Redux Orchestra crossed acoustic electronic borders at the Watergate Club. Although he left classical music long ago, Myers contemplates Kurt Weill's influence on his music, which he associates partly with the Berlin mentality. Listen to a crossfade from Kurt Weill's Pirate Jenny song to the Redux Orchestra. Can you hear Kurt Weill's influence on Myers' club music?
And the ship, the black freighter, turns around in our harbor, shooting guns from the bow. Then you gentlemen can wipe out that laugh from your face. Every building in town is a flat one. Your whole stinking place will be down on the ground. Only this cheap hotel standing out safe and sound. And you yell, why the hell's be that one? And you yell, why the hell's be that one? All the night through with the noise and to do, you wonder who's the person lives up there. Then you see me stepping out into the morning, looking
nice with a. I don't think my music sounds like Kurt Weill, but when you analyze his music, you know, the way he works with repetition and rhythm and a kind of directness is probably the most important, you know? So when he has a thing like da-da-dun-dun-dun, 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 and it goes like the whole song. It's a very direct, almost harsh kind of sound, and I think all of that led directly into the kind of club stuff and the music I was writing, even though you would never hear it and say, oh, that sounds like Kurt Weill. Maybe it's the way the language sounds, maybe it's something about even the Berlin accent or the Berlin dialect, which can be very harsh.
My upstairs neighbor was nice enough to come down and tell us about the Berlin dialect in Berlinerisch.
Und auf Berlinerisch schluckst du viel. Dit is ne große Sache.
She says that in Berlinerisch words are cut short, more emotional, chopped up and quick. Tuck, 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 tuck.
Wenn ich Berliner, dann in der Kneipe, wenn ich mal richtig eine schöne Geschichte zu erzählen habe, komme ich richtig in den Slang rein von Berlinerisch.
Well over 10 years since I met Ari Benjamin Myers, he's still navigating through unknown musical territory. During our talk, he seemed to be composing music by asking questions.
But what if I don't want to make a record? What if I don't even want to give a concert? What if I don't even want to have audience, you know? And so one of the earliest pieces I did was a piece for a singer, an opera singer, that was meant for only one audience member. What's interesting is that this piece had no place in the realm of music in the sense of the music business. In other words, no concert house had the capacity to do a piece for one audience member. You couldn't make a record of it because that made no sense. The only place that it made sense when I started thinking about it would be a museum, where as an installation that says only one person at a time, it makes complete sense.
Language, noise, melody, reverb, space are all parts of sound culture in Berlin. We've talked about making music, but what about listening? Now we've come a full circle. Do you remember the word Flastersteinleger, cobblestone worker? On the train platform near my house, the high-pitched hammering irritated me until I turned around and saw the source of the clinking. The quality of sound changes depending on our perception of it. How we listen is everything. This show wouldn't be possible without you listening, and I wouldn't be here talking to you on the radio. But we are here and listening. David Moss talks about listening to the radio in Berlin.
The art of listening was encouraged. If you can say there's such a thing as the art of listening. There were stations here who made programs, who commissioned artists to make sound art, sound program, music that was not at all narrative even, not even storytelling, in addition to Hörspiels, so radio plays using sound. This was really important in the ability of music to become part of everyone's life and to be not always the same, to change and have people hear and expect new stuff.
While co-curating the Transmediale Festival of Art and Digital Culture and writing a book about listening, Leslie Dunton Downer has spent a lot of time in Berlin listening to people listen.
What my ear tells me about Berlin has more to do with the audience leaning into what they're listening to, hungry to hear an argument that can go on for longer than I'm used to hearing in other places. So there seems to be a genuine need to hear what artists and people who are thinking about the world are saying. So I think it has a lot to do with the history of this place and how it's still in the process of navigating its way through its own history. And I think people need ideas and they need art to help them figure that out.
Pandora's box of the NSA scandals. A fringe lawmaker helping
Berlin for sich.
And it was very
Snowden in seinem Moskau
meeting with the German law. The message to the world. Fringe. I'm not sure about a fringe lawmaker. He is
again
President Obama's advice.
I also recognize the technology that has changed and
joins us now from Berlin with fringe lawmaker. NSA.
A child born today,
NSA,
he says, will grow up with no conception of privacy at all.
Just when spying in Berlin seemed like a thing of the past, with Gestapo, Stasi, and Cold War paraphernalia collecting dust in museums, the NSA came through and made listening a dirty word again. In German, the word is lauschen, eavesdropping. If you say the word at a party in Berlin, someone might pantomime a spy listening.
For maximum behavioral control, and this is the whole way the communication platform is financed. So it should be no surprise at all that we have ever greater surveillance because the capitalist system depends on it to build these communication systems. And obviously, the security agencies are very.
Welcome
very
to the Magical Secrecy Tour. On the June 5th anniversary of the Snowden leaks, the Transmediale Festival invited a confederacy of hackers and artists, fringe politicians, lawyers, and activists to tour Berlin in a city bus. They visited spy posts old and new to ask, what can we learn from the cult of surveillance? Dunton Downer explains.
To use Berlin as a learning base and go around in a bus to learn about it, the history of this city and spying, and get an understanding of the different ways that state surveillance affects people and have a better sense of why people who've actually experienced that in their lifetimes would have a very different take on the NSA activities and mass surveillance.
That for me, it was really a personal flashback when I realized that the Snowden files. I'm now living again in a society which is, more and more collecting personal data, destroying their very core concept, the ideology of the free individual. And I know
the magical secrecy tour bus didn't stop at Angela Merkel's cell phone, famously monitored by the NSA. Its journey culminated in anti-celebration at one of Berlin's most innovative sound art spaces, the NK, which, by the way, used to be a chocolate factory. American writer Jonathan Lethem and Berlin Rising Star actor Lars Eidinger worked with filmmaker A.T. Barrett in A Berlin Friendship. And NK co-founders Farah Hatem and Colin Hacklander performed with Super Collider software, harnessing algorithms and live streams based on keyword searches. The text included a declaration of independence of cyberspace. In reaction to the NSA's perversion of listening, I proposed an installation that expressed the intimate human quality of the ear. I recorded multi-language families in their home acoustics. NK visitors used secondhand earphones to spy on Berlin families, asking questions about listening.
Est-ce qu'on dit ich höre dir zu oder ich höre dich zu?
To me. If you're eating dinner and the NSA is listening, then they think the whole family.
Mam trochu problem.
Am I supposed to listen to this?
Puppy.
Hörst du ihm überhaupt zu?
Er sagte Deutsch sprechen, also du hörst aber gar nicht.
Also muss man.
Und unsere Baule, Ben. Und unsere Baule.
As an adopted Berliner of over 20 years, I thought I had the sound of the city in my pocket. But through this inquiry, I discovered something new at every turn. The bats at the Citadel, my neighbor's Berlinerish roundhouse reverb, and the upward glissando of the S-Bahn, a leitmotif signaling that we're moving through the city, through Berlin. Does the spirit of freedom of the 80s still exist? Or has it been canned and commodified like Elvis statues and Mozart kugels? I asked theater director David Martin what he thinks about the idea of artistic freedom in Berlin today.
My feeling is that it's like a wave getting slowly smaller and smaller. The political situation, which was a huge one, but now it's slowly, it's going away, and I'm asking myself how much is from the left of freedom is already a cliché of ourselves. So it's kind of kitsch, because we know about this freedom, we use it as a label.
I look out the window of the S-Bahn as we pass over Gleisdreieck, track triangle. This is the area that was once owned by West Berlin, but controlled by East Berlin. It's night and I don't see the water tower where Wolfgang Müller, as a young punk, snuck in with his band to record Breathing Life, however briefly, into a politically frozen place. Is it out there in the darkness between the tracks in the no man's land of history? Has it been removed, changed into a TV station or a Starbucks? Or did Wolfgang sneak back in, filling it with bats making invisible music in flight? As we come to the end of the hour, I continue listening to Berlin, to its duet of demolition and construction, harmony through disharmony, and the friction of its ever-shifting borders. Maybe I'll play along on trumpet. This is Paul Brody for Berlin Stories, the Fringe Sound of Berlin. Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining us for Berlin Stories, a magazine of culture and ideas in Berlin. The Fringe Sound of Berlin was produced by Paul Brody in Cupcake Studios and mixed by Jens Trendler in Fünftone Studios, Berlin. Special thanks to Carol Shear, Adam Berry, Sir John Henry, Elena Graupa, Josh Burson, and Jeff Burrell. And to Naomi Plitzko-Shear and Oliver Urbanski for speaking the English voices of Uschi Brüning and Ludwig Petrovsky. For images and videos and more on all these stories, please go to our website, berlinstories.org. And to stay informed about future episodes of Berlin Stories, like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Berlin Stories FM. Once again, here's Paul Brody.
This has been Berlin Stories.